It's time for EcoTalk with host Betsy Rosenberg.
She'll be great. She's a very smart, capable person who knows exactly what took place and will lay out the facts. And that's what the American people want to see.
I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to EcoTalk, where we bring you sound solutions for a healthier planet and people. And today we're going to be talking about life, liberty, and the relentless pursuit of perfection, all in 1 hour. I am thrilled to have Van Jones in studio with me. He is the executive director of the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights in Oakland. That is in the Bay Area, but he is a leader on the national, maybe even international front. He's also a very active member of the Apollo Project. He'll be talking about how a healthy, sustainable life is a matter of justice and how the green wave will pass us all by unless we have everyone on board, and why the green movement is so white. In our second half, we'll be speaking with Jared Huffman. He's a senior attorney for the Natural Resources Defense Council, a group that's one of our environmental partners. He'll be describing the exciting victory, a good victory, a good conclusion for a change to an 18-year-old court battle to restore California's second largest river, raising it from the dead by setting its waters free from a dam. The river will be replenished with salmon and other wildlife. Drinking water will be restored, and we landlubbers will get a second chance to consider our relationship to water, rivers, and that age-old ecosystem we call Earth, otherwise known as our collective home. And finally, their motto has always been the relentless pursuit of perfection. And just last week, they got a little bit closer, we think. BMW is rolling out the first hydrogen car for consumer use, and BMW's Andreas Klugescheid will be joining us to tell us how we can keep up with the Joneses while keeping us off the path of climate destruction. All this and more on EcoTalk, now coming to you 5 days a week. And we are made possible by our advertising sponsors and environmental partners, including one of my favorite green groups as well, the Union of Concerned Scientists, a science-based nonprofit combining independent research and citizen action to achieve innovative solutions for a healthy environment and a safer world. You can find them on the web at ucsusa.org. And by the way, you can find us on the web, those of you joining us for the first or second time, at ecotalk.net. And speaking of the Joneses, now pleased to bring in Van Jones. You drive a BMW?
I don't drive a BMW.
What'd you say, a white Ford? We just had to feed your meter, so
exactly.
You just mentioned that.
Yeah, a little Escort there.
A little Escort, very fuel efficient, and it doesn't have to be a hybrid car to be fuel efficient.
Thank you.
As we mentioned at the top of the show, Van Jones is the executive director of a great center in Oakland called the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights. They do a lot of great work there. And again, we are proud to have you as part of our launch week. And you are a tireless defender and advocate of human rights and progressive public policy, playing a crucial role in connecting life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for all people with a commitment to environmental sustainability. Now, Van is one of those amazing people who is constantly brimming with new ideas and projects and even new ways to talk about it. He's also not afraid to ask the tough questions and answer the tough questions honestly. Now, if this is truly a global movement to save the Earth, why is the green movement so white? So let's find out. Van Jones, welcome back to EcoTalk. We last spoke to you a year ago, June, when the World Environment Day was underway in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. The environmental justice issues was a big track then, and you had high hopes that that would really put it on the map in not only a national but international way. Did that change anything?
I think so. We were really lucky that Gavin Newsom, the San Francisco mayor, understood the importance of having a special track, what we call the social equity track, that we could really talk about how does this idea of greening the cities impact on the people who live in the cities, and can we make sure that the efforts to green the cities create a green economy strong enough to lift people out of poverty so that we can deal with both environmentalism and human needs at the same time. We put that on the stage there with the United Nations World Environment Day, and that got us off to a great start.
Now, human rights and environmental sustainability, it may seem obvious to many of our listeners, certainly to you, where the connection lies, but maybe show us where it hasn't or it should, or where it needs to go.
Sure. Well, you know, you said earlier that the green movement is right now considered to be a white movement. I think it's because of the way that we're defining what's green. Right now, often when people think about, you know, the green movement, especially kind of moving in the direction of solutions to the environmental problems, we often think about either business opportunities for rich people or consumer choices for affluent people. So it's about solar panels. It's about hybrid cars. It's about all of this sort of the new kind of eco-chic thing that's kind of jumping off. But when we talk about it, we are talking about not just business opportunities for the rich or consumer opportunities for the affluent. We're talking about job opportunities, wealth-building opportunities, and health-building opportunities for low-income people, for poor people. So when we talk about the green movement, we're talking about, can our young people be trained and have jobs to be installing those solar panels? Can young people in urban America be given the opportunity to and the support to do our own organic farming and, you know, rooftop gardening, that kind of thing? Can we create what we call green-collar jobs? Jobs that are living wage, dignified work in sustainable enterprises, and can we have ownership interest in those enterprises as well? We feel it's very important as we begin to go from the last century's pollution-based economy, where low-income people and people of color really bore the brunt of the poison, of the toxins, of the pollution. As we begin to move from the pollution-based economy of the last century to the new clean and green economy of the new century, those communities that were locked out economically in the last century should be locked in to this clean and green economy. The communities that suffered the most need to get the most benefits. And so we want to see the solar panels going up in the ghetto first. You know, we want to see biodiesel coming to urban America first, so we can clean up the air, clean up the water, and make sure that the green wave, as we say, lifts all boats.
And you said, can we? And you're showing that we can.
Yes.
What needs to change for that to happen on a much more widespread mainstream basis?
Sure. Well, first of all, I think we have to recognize that the next big shift in the economy is going to be towards sustainability. If you talk to Bill Gates, you talk to, you know, Steve Case, you talk to any of these people who are the internet billionaires in the last century, they say the next big play, green tech, clean tech, there's going to be this huge shift in the economy towards sustainability.
And when you have Walmart and GE talking
sure.
about really embracing green
exactly.
technology and you know, right. organic produce and clothing and jewelry and wild-caught salmon being sold by Walmart, you have to start believing there's something going on there.
I think that's right. So then the question is, are we going to have eco-equity or are we going to have eco-apartheid? Are we going to are only the, you know, small numbers of wealthy affluent people going to be able to take full advantage and get benefits, or are we going to have a green growth agenda in the United States that's based on a sense of shared prosperity and shared opportunity? That is one of the fundamental questions that the country faces as we move forward. What we're saying is there's some very practical things that can be done right now and that we're working on in Oakland to begin to ensure that we get eco-equity and not eco-apartheid. Number one, we're working with the Peralta Community Colleges and others in Oakland, the community college system, to build what we call a green jobs core. What that means is you're going to be training young people in the job skills that they will need to perform well in this new green economy, to be able to install solar panels, to be able to retrofit buildings so that they don't leak so much energy, to be able to deal with biofuels, et cetera. So green jobs core, critical. The other thing that we're saying is we need to have what we are calling green enterprise zones, you know, green enterprise and empowerment zones, where whole neighborhoods are designated for investment with, you know, green, clean, sustainable enterprise, and people in those neighborhoods are then trained through that green job corps to work. We can deal with the problems of economic development, community safety, environmental challenges through the lens of the green economy, but we've got to come together with a commitment to doing that.
What I like about your approach, among other things, is you're really an idealist, and you talk about addressing several problems with basically one, mm-hmm. you know, broad scope solution, but you're also a realist.
Yes. Well,
you're not a pie in the sky kind of guy.
Well, no, I mean, because, you know, when you look at what's going on in the in urban America right now, we need big vision, but we also need smart, workable solutions.
And we're going to take a break in just a moment. But when we come back, I want to hear about some of the, you know, real world impacts, the effects, what some of these kids who are getting these opportunities are saying. Is it really changing lives? And what are the biggest obstacles? I just want to take note of the fact that when we last spoke, it was just a couple of months before Hurricane Katrina. Mm-hmm. And of course, it seems now in retrospect, looking back at the last 12 months, that really began this mm-hmm. tipping point of awareness, global awareness, but certainly in this country, about global warming, the threat to our own shores, our own people. And certainly there was an environmental justice aspect to that. And of course, W saying he can't sign Kyoto because it will wreck the economy and cost jobs. And how many jobs, how many homes, how many lives were lost in just one storm that, you know, might mm-hmm. well have been, likely was, the result of, you know, more intense yes. hurricanes because of the warming of the ocean's temperature. So at least, you know, we put him in his place conclusively. I mean, in a lot of ways. But that really put this on the map. And we are in the process now of feeling this tipping point, this surge of awareness, and starting to see the impacts both at the top with corporations, as we've mentioned, all the way down to the street level. So when we come back, we're going to talk about some of that. And you're listening to Eco Talk. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg, in conversation with Van Jones. You can find us on the net at www.ecotalk.net. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Eco Talk. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg, talking to Van Jones. And he is leading a movement, we hope, that's getting underway as we speak, starting in Oakland and the Bay Area, but really going across the land to really bring all people of color and minorities into this effort. Lord knows it's going to take all of us. It will take a village. And tell us, you know, where you are in that process, because we can talk about all these great concepts, but, you know, what's the reality? How close are you to actually, if you have to gauge, is this really working? You know, I'm sure someone will want to see, you know, track your success rates. And are you getting funding? Are you getting the support? Are you getting excitement? Are we going to see a revival just like that music kind of inspired us to feel there will be?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we're at the beginning of, I think, two important shifts in the environmental movement. First is moving from this kind of, you know, dreary, depressing focus on all the problems and all the bad news and more bad news tomorrow, moving more and more toward, you know, what can we do? What are the positive solutions? What are the alternatives? Let's talk about organic agriculture. Let's talk about alternative fuels. So that move from problem to solution is critical. The other movement is from focusing on the affluent sectors and their engagement with environmentalism, increasingly because of Katrina, because of, you know, cancer and asthma rates and all these other kind of things, you know, begin to focus more on what about the people who are in the working class? What about the people who are poor? Can they benefit from this new green economy? You know, from our point of view, you know, the progress that we're making is really exciting in Oakland because so many of the elected officials and business leaders there they're already committed to doing something about the environment. You know, Oakland is been recognized as one of those urban centers that's moving in the direction of sustainability.
Certainly, Mayor Jerry Brown was one of the greenest mayors.
Well, he certainly talked a good talk about it, and he let some of his employees really began to carve some ground forward. Our concern with the next administration in the next 8 years is that we actually deliver on some of those promises, and we deliver on some of those opportunities. And we've got great leadership in Oakland, people who are committed. You know, what I think, though, is critical for people who don't live in Oakland to think about is, you know, we've almost given up on our urban environments. We've almost given up on the so-called inner city. And what we're saying is that those communities that we don't believe we have any throwaway species or resources, and we don't believe we have any throwaway neighborhoods or children either. We think that this is a time for us to really go back to first principles and say it's all sacred, say we want to invest in healing our planet and giving young people in urban America the jobs and the opportunity to do that healing. Because then you're solving the social problems and the environmental problems too.
You know, one of our slogans is greening the red and blue states one show at a time, particularly pertinent for an Air America audience. But the message behind that, and I hope it comes through, is, you know, while we're quibbling about all these political differences, you know, home is burning, you know, while we're fiddling away here and bickering away. And this can be the one, you know, sort of common thread that we certainly all share to bring us together. Is that way too idealistic, or are you starting to see that, you know, this could really be the great leveler, and not just, you know, red versus blue, black versus white, but in the Mideast, I mean, across the planet, which is, of course, so troubled right now.
Well, sure. I mean, the thing about it is, I think what we should be aiming for is what, you know, has been referred to as the Green New Deal, that we need to have a politics of hope and a politics of possibility, optimism. You know, during the New Deal, everybody gives FDR all the credit. But what you had there was you had progressive bankers, you had labor, you had students, you had minorities standing together saying, this is what we want to do as a country. And there was a role for government, there was a role for business, there was a role for labor, and a role for community folks. What we want to say now is, listen, there's a role for the government in this new century. It's not, you know, this sort of nanny state or welfare state. I mean, you know, nobody was excited about the welfare state when it was around. It's certainly, though, not this warfare state either. It's not the role for government in the new century isn't to be the welfare state or the warfare state. It's to be a partner to the problem solvers that are desperately trying to fix what's wrong. You have the government right now is on the side of the problem makers. They're on the side of the incarcerators, the polluters, the warmongers, the clear cutters. And yet the problem solvers in our economy, the coaches, the counselors, the teachers, the eco-entrepreneurs, the solar engineers, the people who are trying to solve the problem, they get nothing from our government. We get very little from our government. What we're saying is we want government to be a partner to the problem solvers. Let's get government on the side of the problem solvers in our economy and in our neighborhoods. And when you do that, you've got a politics where the best of the business community can stand with the best of labor, can stand with the best of community groups. And by all of us standing together, which is what the Apollo Alliance is all about, by all of us standing together, you suddenly have a new politics of hope.
So I suspect, and we just have 1 minute left, you don't think that the Green Revolution should just be led by business, because many people think that's where really the change is going to come, and why should we not let that be the only leader there?
No, because that's the fast track to what we call eco-apartheid. You've got to have partnerships with labor, government, and community to make sure that business can do what it does, it can innovate, but we want to make sure that the prosperity that's being generated and this green growth agenda is a prosperity that's shared by all.
You know, I'm hearing a term a lot, green not only is the new red, white, and blue, but green is the new black. Could black be the new green?
Sure, black could be the new green, and hopefully green will be the new gold for all of our communities.
Van Jones, thanks so much for joining us. Executive Director for the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights and so much more, a tireless defender for all of us. Thanks for being with us again.
Thank you very much.